The Jack B Show, where pit smarts meet street smarts. Now, here's your host, Jack Berusian.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. We actually missed Tuesday this week, and it's always a pleasure. Hope you enjoyed that long Memorial Day holiday. It's always nice having that extra day, isn't it? And I hope it was nice where you were at. Here in Chicago, folks, it was rainy and cloudy. We don't get sun very often here, at least not until June or July. Those of you that are old Midwesterners know exactly what I'm talking about. But what we do have, though, is quite a bit of volatility in these markets, folks. And unless you've been hiding under a rock, you have noticed some serious movement in equities, in bonds. And not only today, not only yesterday, but I want you to take a step back. And what we're going to talk a little bit about today is this huge move that we have seen, this big break, this disconnect that's finally taken place between bonds and stocks. You know, it's funny because I have been talking about this ad nauseum now for at least a couple of years, where I have been waiting for the great rotation. Now, folks, I don't want you to take these last 2 days and make a decision based on them, because a lot of this is end of the month type of action. You know, everybody always asks me, you know, what are the things that you look at? Well, I don't look at this, all right, because quite frankly, this is the type of thing that I discount. All right. And somebody said to me, are you worried about utilities going down 10% off of their highs? I said, well, no, I wasn't, you know, worried about it when they went up 40%. You know, I guess the reality is this, folks, that markets don't go in one direction. So when you see this type of action, try to understand what it is and try to understand where it's coming from. If you noticed today's action, a lot of it started overseas. You came in this morning and the markets were a lot lower. Well, where did that action start? It basically started right after the Asian close. All right. Japan, which had a fairly good season and a good session, I should say. All of a sudden, you had a little news that came out about a slowdown in China, and we saw a sell-off. We saw a sell-off that took place in Europe, and somebody said to me, oh, they're going down, they're turning. And I said, would you stop for a second and take a look at what time of month it is, please? Understand what has happened over the course of the last month. And what has happened? Well, I'm going to give you an idea, folks. All right? You know, remember what May was. May was the month where you sold them and walked away. Well, guess what? If you sold them and walked away, you know what you're doing? You're running right back in. And you're doing it at a much higher level. This market has gone straight up in the month of May, let alone every Tuesday. Imagine being short every Tuesday for this year. Tuesdays alone could carry you out, just alone. Think about it that way, folks, all right? The idea is understanding the trend. And what is the trend telling us? The trend is telling us that finally we're getting that great rotation. Don't believe me? Well, you have to do me a favor. I want everybody that's doing this, that's listening to me, whether you're listening to me now, whether you listen to me in a month from now, go back and take a look at the action, the price action for the month of May. I want you to take the S&P, and then I want you to overlay the bond market. Now, you could take an ETF if you want. It doesn't matter to me. The 10-year note is really the best way to take a look at it. Overlay that. Folks, it is almost tick for tick, move for move, in a microwave by microwave pattern in an opposite direction. You have seen bond prices go down. Remember that inverse relationship. Bonds go down, yields go up. At the almost on a percentage basis to a T, what stocks are up for a month. Now, why is that important? Well, because for the last few months, we haven't seen that happen. We have seen the stock market going up, but basically we have seen the bond market telling us that it doesn't believe stocks. We've seen a bond market continue to trade under 2%, stubbornly under 180, trying to figure out what exactly the story is. Well, the story is this, folks. The story is that what the Fed is doing is working. Don't take this little short fat Armenian's word for it. Take a look at the numbers. Consumer confidence, the highest it's been in 7 years. All right. How about home prices? Kay Schiller's telling us, which, by the way, is a lagging indicator, all right, that it's up 10%. You know what that is, folks? I'm going to give you an idea of what that is, because for a lot of you new timers and youngsters out there, now I feel like one of the ballpark, the announcers, you know, for all you youngsters out there, stop it right there, okay? Remember, folks, okay, that is what we call the wealth effect. Remember that term? The wealth effect? You know what the wealth effect does, folks? The wealth effect actually has a very, very important ancillary effect. The wealth effect expands the multiple in the market. Remember what the market is made of, folks. You have science and you have art. The science are the hard numbers, earnings that come out, and I keep hammering this into your head. 5% based off of what we've seen over the last year, maybe 7% when you include dividends, you're looking at an S&P making $115 a share. Put the multiple on it, folks. This is the highest and most corporate America, as the S&P 500 is measured, has ever made. So now, are you going to sit there and try to say that in this environment that we can expect to see maybe, a multiple of 14.8 with this type of interest rate? Folks, I got to tell you something. You know, had anybody said that 10 years ago, they would have thought you were out of your mind. The reality, as I see it, is that we now see people waking up. The non-believers are starting to believe. All right, and I got to tell you something, folks. For all of us that have been in the market and riding this wave, it's what we wanted to see. Why? Well, because it's telling us, number one, that we're right, okay? And number two, that what's going to happen now is over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, it's going to be very curious. Leadership will change. It already did. What did we see happen over the course of the last month? Technology took over. Technology, which was a lagging indicator over the course of the first few months of this rally, even though it went up, the S&P 500 was actually doing much better than technology stocks. Now the Russell, around 1,000. Who would have thought the Russell at 1,000, folks? It is the supply chain of the big boys. You are seeing the market reacting accordingly, and the expansion in the multiple, folks, is the wealth effect. These asset allocations that are taking place is all part of the wealth effect. So don't be surprised if we continue to see this for the rest of the year. And as I've said to you before, that means a 2.5, maybe even 3% 10-year. Yes, folks, that's right. And an S&P, are you ready for this? And are you sitting down? How about 1850? Yeah, that's exactly where we can go, folks. And that, you know what does? It puts us at fair valuation, at least in my mind. But you know what? I'll tell you what. Let's bring somebody else in here that could probably shed a lot more light on this whole subject. A good friend of the show's, you've heard him before, the prolific blogger, one of the best on the street, a real renaissance man. I'm talking about Alan Rohrbeck. Alan, my friend, always good to have you on. And by the way, I hope I didn't take too much of your time. I want you to know that, for number one, I love your work, because whatever I pay attention to your work, what I do is I'm always paying attention to your over-under numbers, and I know that They're the momentum numbers. But I really want to start this off by saying, you know, what do you feel about what I've been talking about these big asset allocations? Are you a believer in them?
Well, Jack, it all fits right in with the macro technical view. So that's a very good question that relates back to something that the central banks have accomplished that, yes, consumer confidence is important. The house prices up are important. But part of the backing for all that is something you discussed before. You said the central banks are going to eliminate the crisis speed bumps.
Yeah, they did. They smoothed out the volatility.
They smoothed out those volatile bumps. And now if you really see the earnings, as you pointed out, and there's no sense, at least right now, and even if it were to come along, the market's up far enough. We've discussed this on the CME open markets discussions as well. Even if something were to come along, let's put in a 10% correction from 1680 in the S&P. Where does that get you to? Get you back to the low 1500s.
That's still
nothing.
Which
is still support.
Yeah.
But let's also say you might not get that. A lot of people waiting for a correction that
big. I could see that happening, and I could still see my target of 1850 being hit by the end of the year only because of the way this market moves. I mean, look at the move that we've seen over the course of the last
Absolutely.
5 months.
Absolutely. And, of course, it would get you back to a risk-off mentality, but we know when those go away, risk-on has some real fundamental grounding now in all the good earnings. So I agree with what you're saying. But in that regard, we can focus down to some fine line things. As you know, we covered already on the way up before it even got there. As soon as the market got above 1600, we said the target 1669 and 1673 area was important.
Well, now what are you looking at? I know that you know what, I know you look at a lot of different things, but is there something that you've been concentrating on lately that's been
giving
you?
That was the objective, that significant gap higher after the U.S. employment report, the April report, which came out on May 3rd, when it gapped above 1600. It's a swing count function. You always ask me to clarify this without running a technical analysis course over
right.
the radio.
You know what? I mean, look, you don't need to get a lot of, by the way, those of you that do want to know it and get into Alan's minutia, I'm sure that Alan, you teach courses with the BBI guys.
Well, right. And I'd say call Bull and Bear Institute, and we have a lot of different ways to learn about this. But the basic idea there is the straight line up move before the non-farm payrolls report was 63 points from the last low at 1631 in the wake of the terrible Boston Marathon bombing crisis, all the way up to 1594, 1530, 63 points. You had 63 points to 1606. That was the low of the gap higher day on the non-farm payrolls on May 3rd. You get 1669. Now, these are minimum targets.
Now,
I've
been listening to these targets now, Alan, for a while, and you've been right on. At least your general areas are, for me, they're very good. If nothing else, the market seems to stall at that area.
Right.
All right. We saw that area hit. Now, here's, I guess, the question for you. What happens if the market doesn't give you that full pullback? Does that tell you that the market's stronger than you think or stronger than the street thinks?
Well, yeah. First of all, how much of a pullback you get, you just look at the lower technical supports. If you top into an area like that, that's fine. Well, was it a major top for a bigger sell-off? Well, you watch your incremental areas, one of which is around 1640 to 35. We saw late last week and again today, and it's holding. So that's not a good sign for the bears. That's a sign of good underlying support. Even if it got below 1635, the big level is back at that 1600 area gap from shortly after, you know, the non-farm payroll.
Yeah, I see. You can see it on the charts when you go back there and you take a look at a
exactly.
daily chart. Yeah.
Much like it gapped above 1520 to 30.
Right.
And then all the sell-offs, they couldn't get below it, still bullish. So, but the more important point about, well, are you going to get the full correction? The question is, how long does it correct across time? And the answer is,
you're a big believer that markets correct in time or price.
That's
right. Yeah, because I know you
we call
it
the self-correcting market. If it just holds still, the underlying momentum catches up with it.
See, people don't understand that. And I always try to stress that to people because they're always looking for that big pullback. And I go, you know what? A market that goes sideways in many cases for me is as good, if not better, than one that actually pulls back.
No, it is better. It's showing that there's so much buying pressure around it can't go into a bigger correction. So the question now, late this week, maybe in the next, now that you've tried to overrun 1669 by a goodly margin, they were up in the 1685 area.
That's
so
right.
That's by $16, and you came below it all in one day last Wednesday. This is the classic.
That was the euphoric, the euphoria.
The exhaustion.
Yeah.
Right.
Which led me to believe that we were getting to a near-term top, and I started to think about, okay, if there's ever going to be a 3% pullback, or if, you know what, it'll probably come from that type of euphoric, type of top.
And it set a specific type of reversal last Wednesday after the initial euphoric response to Bernanke sounding like they were going to continue QE endlessly and then the question over whether they might taper up to 1685 down to close down around the 1656 area, I believe. And what you have then is a one day, but it also showed up on the weekly. It was a new weekly high and lower close for the week. That's called the closing price reversal.
Now, is that an outside? That's an outside week, is it not?
Well, it was not an outside week. It was an outside day
okay.
on Wednesday. Higher than Tuesday's high, lower than Tuesday's low. Also impressive, but the question always is, whenever you get a signal, closing price reversal, all in one increment like that, elaborate top that takes months to form, does the signal maintain? And that's why what's important from here, if the market should stabilize, as I see it already doing today, around 1640 to 35, and it pushes back up later this week or early next, does it continue to respect that 1669 to 73 area? If it does, on another test, it may be a more serious top. We maybe at least get down towards 1600. If it does not, if you end up well above, and it's a big signal, so I've given a broad berth, maybe $5.
You know, we're talking about 1 or 2 days worth of action.
I know, but
it's so quick.
If you're above, if you're 1678 or higher, especially on a weekly close, it is negating the topping action. And once a market tries to make a signal in one direction, it doesn't work. It's likely to go the other way. If we're above 1678, I would suggest on a just rule of thumb, because that is also around the all-time high oscillator level. We're out beyond the stretch out that we even had in April of 1999, if they get through there. They're above 1678. I think you're going 1705, 1710 at a minimum before it's stretched out enough that it'll try and top again.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense to me. You mentioned the Fed and you mentioned tapering a second ago. One of the comments that I made, and I said this in front of a couple of 100 million people in Asia last night, and I'm going to say it today on the closing bell with Santelli and Maria. Tapering and tightening are two different things.
Oh, they're worlds apart.
And I've got a feeling that the street has got these two things confused. And it's one of the things that I've always wondered about. Now, I'll say
One of your favorite guys was on this morning once again. Did you catch Larry Fink at all this
morning? I did. He is one of my favorites.
He has the same story. Yeah, of course, psychologically, the tapering. I mean, going from $85 billion a month to $75 billion a month. Think about that. First of all, you're going they're only going to buy $75 billion
this
month.
Even if they went to 50, even if they went to zero,
whatever.
It's still not tightening.
But especially initially, he says, well, of course it causes a psychological reaction. But as long as they still are pumping money out on a large scale, maybe just a slightly less, it's a buying opportunity,
yeah.
And that fits in with our idea of let the market get psychologically nervous. But as long as on the next sell-off, even if it knocks out 1635, and there's actually a secondary level right near there, 32, they're supported 1620, and again at 1606, unless it's below 1594 on trading at the very least, much less it'll have to close below there to look really bad, unless it's below 1594, the high of the rally, the all-time high, before it jumped up after that non-farm payroll report, it's a sell-off to support.
Well, just on a percentage basis, and folks, for those of you that are listening out there that do watch that type of thing, the numbers that Alan are talking about not only technically have validity, but on a percentage-based retracement, Alan, just to put it into perspective, you take 5% off of the high,
yeah,
and it takes us right down to 1605 or
1606. Right, 1606 to
1600. Yeah, and so that's right there for me. I mean,
right.
So technically that makes sense. And why is 5% big, folks? At least for me, and Alan, I know you've heard me say this. My old mentor, Bing Sung, who used to run the Harvard Endowment Fund, used to tell me that bull markets do not let people in.
Right.
And right now, everybody is looking for the 10% pullback so that they can get in. I've heard probably 3 or 4 people who have already said, you know what, if you've missed this, don't get in because the market's probably going to pull back 10% over the course of the next
couple
of months.
But they were saying that at 1550 as well as 1650.
You know what, they said it when we were down in the 1350 levels after the election. I guess my point to you is, you know what, here was a month where, as I said earlier, they said to walk away, right? You sell and you walk away. Well, it's been straight up. It's been the strongest month of the year, I think. All right, if you go back and look at it. And it's the first month where we have actually seen a crack in the bond market.
That's big. Because it's telling you, regardless of the Fed still going to be buying, regardless of things are looking okay, you know, stabilizing in Europe, they're still recessionary, but the PMIs are getting a little better. It's all saying, guess what? These premiums, these government bonds have had premium pricing and low yields. It's just not sustainable if the economy does pick up. You know, if the real traction gets here, that's showing up some degree in confidence. I'm still keeping a close eye on retail sales to make sure nothing that comes along with the Obamacare issues.
You've got to be surprised at the upbeat performance of a lot of these economic indicators. I mean, I know you and I have been looking at it. We've looked at Obamacare as the cloud hanging over the marketplace. We've talked about overregulation. We've talked about all the various things that exist. I mean, they're there. You know, we see them, and I know the rest of the world sees them. Yet we see economic indicators telling us different things.
Right.
You know, I guess my point is, you've got to be as surprised as I am by that, and by the lack of inflation,
well,
for that matter.
I'm a little bit surprised, but also we have to keep a close eye on how things develop over the next several months, because the second half of the year is the more accelerated phase where corporations who are making changes to their health plans, reducing people's hours, they really have to put that into higher gear in the second half of the year. We've heard of some of it. Question is whether it bites. But even if it does, I think the market's trading off other things too. There are things that might override the Obamacare influence, such as the most wonderful thing that happened recently, terrible wonderful thing, that is the only thing that could have restored the very fiscally conservative, aggressive,
smaller
government, is the is the IRS scandal.
Oh, yeah.
There was nobody else on the planet who could have put the Tea Party back in the good graces of the general perception other than the IRS was picking on them. Now you got to give the Tea Party some a break.
Well, you know, for me, again, my biggest concern is, and I don't really care about the Tea Party. Like, I know that my friend Rick Santelli is given credit for stuff. I don't even know if he's a member, to be honest with you. Knowing Rick, he probably isn't. But no, the bottom
psychologically
line
psychologically encouraging it,
well,
I think.
You know what? I mean, he's a journalist. When the story is the journalist, that's not good. But, right. You know, the bottom line is this, that it's an ideal, and I get it. But what I would hope that those that are angry want to do is change the entire tax code, because that is more important.
And that came out on the other great thing that came out this past week.
When Cook came out and spoke in front of Congress, I mean, you know, they're talking about bringing home all this money. There's $1 trillion, dollars sitting overseas.
That's the other big thing about, you know, how do you encourage a sensible revision, but as good from another front of the Tea Party, which is less taxation and regulation, which all amounts to smaller government. I hope they sent a nice bouquet of flowers to Dave Axelrod.
Yeah.
Well, how could you expect Obama to know? You know, the government's so big, no one can really know what's going on. It's like, well, maybe.
Well, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't have grown
downsized.
It so big. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Hey, listen, let's take a look at what's coming up.
I was about to ask
you,
not only for next week, but I also want to ask you about some of the, real quickly, do you have anything else that you are watching aside from those markets that we just discussed? All right? Because I know that you pay attention to copper, you pay attention to some of these other commodity markets.
Mostly where the equities push out through the top side or stall again on the rally, because that is going to be a big arbiter of whether the bonds can hold. If equities push up, I think bonds are toast. Below to give a specific level, a weekly close by any degree, I'd say about a half a point, below 130 even. And I sometimes disparage
the degree. Where is the 10-year right now?
The 10-year is about 130.08 to 16.
Okay.
And it's been down testing 130 already. It is on multiple levels technically, both on the contract, on the June, and the longer-term continuation chart where we string the different contracts as they expire, string them all together. 130 in the lead contract T-note is a huge critical level, much below which the prices are accelerating to the downside, which means yields could accelerate up. We're not going right to 14%, but I'm saying get maybe back 2 or above 2.5 very
but
quickly.
You get to 2.5, and I see that money going into equities really quickly, and
right,
that could really fuel the market. And what do we got coming out, Alan? That's going to maybe be the catalyst.
It's
for all
of
that.
All of the end of month stuff that is very, very interesting and important. We've had some. Well, the interesting part, the equities are holding up still on relatively weak data everywhere else, but here. The confidence, the housing was good. The other stuff, the rest of the
world
doesn't look
that
good.
We had a bad number out of China this morning, and I know
that. You had bad numbers out of Europe, which is what's so important about tomorrow. Before we get in, we've got a range of Eurozone confidence numbers in front of the second look at U2 first quarter, U.S. first quarter GDP. And Friday is just one of those huge end of month, last day of the month, your German retail sales, all sorts of Japanese numbers, right into U.S. personal income and consumption, Chicago PMI. And then, of course, we get into next week, which is first week. It's a full calendar week. First week of the month, central banks, Australia, England, Eurozone, all the PMIs Monday and Wednesday of
next
week.
Do you expect any changes out of the course that we see a lot of these central banks taking?
No, that's why I think you have to look not just through this week. That's why I said or in the next at what the equities do, because you're going to hear more accommodative talk from the European Central Bank and the even the Reserve Bank of Australia got in the act with that surprise rate cut last time. So you're going to have a
they wanted to join the party. You and I know that.
They
you know
were
what I mean?
Feeling so left
they,
out.
They, you know what? They were not able to drink that Kool-Aid, and they wanted to start drinking that electric Kool-Aid.
They got it.
Hey, you know what? I got a I guess one of my last questions for you, Alan. I just from a philosophical standpoint, you know, I'm listening to people talking about the market being overextended. And, you know, whenever I hear that, I tend to think, wait a second, you know, compared to what? And, you know, as people have heard me say time and time again, I'm a big fan of looking at valuation as a market indicator. Do you think that what we see happening over the course of these last couple of months, even with the indicators might be as bad as they are, and there's some weakness that's there, but do you think that maybe, just maybe, that wealth effect that I had been talking about earlier is starting to creep back into the marketplace, and with it maybe an expansion
of
the multiple?
You are much more expert in that perception than I am, but I will relate that back to that level I gave you before, that 1678 on the S&P future, maybe to 1680. That is $190 over the 41-week average. So going back to my real expertise, pure technical. These oscillators are points where the market stretched out, and if it respects them, the rubber band wants to pull back in a bit, you know, release some of the overly stretched tension. But the lower oscillator levels are also useful for that. There was a level down at 115. There's another level about 140 to 145 that the market escaped getting here, and that's the function of the market having the rubber band stretch instead of...
What's the most
coming
you've ever
in,
seen that stretch out?
That's it, 190.
Really?
And so the point I'm making is if the rubber band snaps this time to release the market for the next push, you're a new all-time high ground, and that would speak of the degree to which we are in a market, and this is like we saw in April of 99. That's the last. That's when it got there.
So
the
at 190 over
1680,
the
16. Let's call it 1678.
Okay, so now we've come back down. Say we're at 1640. We've taken 40 points off of that. I'm sure that's gone up also, has it not?
Yes. The thresholds go up.
So that's is that back down to about 120 or 130 over?
That would be at this point approximately 145 over.
Okay.
That's one of the thresholds, and the other one's down at 115. That would be the one more so in the low 1600s.
Got it.
So you use these as thresholds. But again, the key is, Jack, you're saying we're in kind of a new era, like we were coming out of Greenspan's tightening in 94, and it got rid of all the
Are
excess.
You expecting for that thing to snap and that 190 to not be the all-time high?
Unless this mark can at least get back below 1635 soon, then it could. And more importantly, the question is, well, doesn't snap? You know me, as a technician, I just follow what the market tells me. If we get above 1678 to 80, I don't ask questions. You're going another $25. That's all I know.
No, that makes
sense. You're
going
1705 to 10 before you get a chance to stop again.
How about on the inflation front? You know, we have a very good friend of ours that we bring out every now and then. In fact, I'll have him on tomorrow, the mayor, Aaron Reinglass, very nice guy, one of the smartest brains, as you well know, of the markets. And he is of the opinion that inflation is something we shouldn't even talk about anymore because it's non-existent, nor will it be existent
until
for a long time.
Until your labor market tightens, you don't have the kind of inflation that's a worry. Is
wage inflation the same? I mean, what you're talking about?
Wage inflation is the one you have to worry about, and it's not there right now. Labor market's too weak to worry about inflation. I agree with Aaron wholeheartedly on that one.
You know, that's interesting because for me, that's the other thing. Well, hey, it's a real pleasure, my man. And for those of you out there, you know, again, Alan Rohrbach, folks. And for those of you out there, you can always read his blog at Rohr-blog, one of the best bloggers on the street. Alan Rohrbach, you got to love that stuff. Hey, the other thing that I want you to watch, and by the way, Alan didn't talk about it, and he just stepped out of the room, but it's also jobless claims, which comes out tomorrow. You know, I did Squawk Box Asia. And by the way, if you ever want to watch any of those clips that we do, and I'm going to be doing another one here, I'll be doing a closing bell in just a little while. You can always go to the Jack B Show site. Our trusted people put those shots up immediately whenever they get a chance. But pay attention to jobless claims. I've got a feeling, as I said on TV yesterday, and I know that Shri was telling us this, it's one of the markets or one of the indicators that the entire market's paying very close attention to, especially with a monthly number coming out next week. This is Jack Barugian. I'll be on tomorrow with the mayor. I'll talk to you then.
views and opinions expressed in the preceding program are not necessarily those of this radio station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult the appropriate advisor before making any financial decisions. All rights reserved.